This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Canucks in blue going from right to left as Garland breaks up a pass, but in front it's Brock Faber and he scores. Just 22 seconds into the third, Garland broke up the pass but couldn't clear it from the slot, and Faber beats Lankinen to make it a one-goal game and has points in three straight games. As the Wild find the puck to the net, they score! Marcus Foligno, top of the crease, able to force it past Kevin Lankinen, and it's a 2-2 game with 6:46 left in regulation time.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
They'll drop it to Kaprizov on the boards. 2:15 left in overtime. Now for Zuccarello in alone on net. He scores! Matt Zuccarello dekes out Kevin Lankinen, beats him stick side, and the Wild come back after trailing 2-0 through 40 minutes. They beat the Canucks 3-2 in overtime.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 3-2 in overtime against the Minnesota Wild, who came back from a two-goal deficit in the third period to win in overtime. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to bring in Landon Ferraro into the conversation in just a moment. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. It was a game that, you know, was pretty low scoring up until the game got tied in the third, and it did have a lot of eventful moments, including Trenin getting tossed from the game for a punch on Derek Forbort after he was on the ice after their fight, and just a lot of confusion about how that entire play was adjudicated. And that's what I want to start with here with you, Landon. So the call was instigator on Trenin, despite the fact that Trenin threw the hit on Hughes, and it's clear that Forbort was going after Trenin. And then there was an extra two being called for roughing. And then there was a five-minute major for fighting, of course, and game misconduct, but not a five-minute major out of it. I just don't know how the calls were made. Can you make sense of it as a former player? What happened there in terms of how that entire sequence was adjudicated?
I wish I had a better answer for you, but honestly, no. And it's one of the issues that, while I was still playing, you just want everything to be called correctly, and you want to know what the standard is. When you see a player defenseless on the ice after a fight's already been stopped, I've been told since the time that fighting came in, when you go to junior, like, you do not throw another punch. It happens once in a while. I understand that as guys are heated up, but when someone's got their arms pinned and their face is sitting right there and you land one of the most solid rights I've seen in a long time, yeah, like, that to me is a match. And I don't really understand how you can't, that isn't the call. Like, I've been in enough hockey games where I feel like I should know the answer to that.
Yeah.
And yet you're still kind of guessing. Like, I'm watching it, and as they announce it, the first thing that pops into my head is, I just don't understand.
Yeah.
Because it seems like the most point-blank easy call to make. If you're there to protect players, well, you got to protect them. And you've seen it now a couple different things over the last few days that they're not in the normal game. And yet they happen, and there hasn't been the right call or a suspension that follows it. And it's the quickest, easiest way, like the Chatfield one the other night for the Carolina game with Washington. And if you just set that precedent early, that stuff doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't seen a punch like that connect at an end of a fight when someone's defenseless on the ground in a long time. This is a pretty easy time to let the guys know, and a reminder of, this doesn't belong in our game.
So I will say, they've adjusted the box score.
Okay, they have now? Okay, so what have they
in arena,
to?
Like, I could have sworn I heard game misconduct Almer Duck.
They did say it.
On the box score, it was the fighting major, instigator was interference, it was labeled as,
yes,
originally. It's now been changed to a 10-minute game misconduct.
10-minute misconduct?
Yes.
So not even a game misconduct?
Not a game. It was a 10-minute game misconduct, yes.
Okay.
Sorry. I don't understand how that's not a major on top of it, intent to injure, whatever you want to call it. That's a classless play.
And not to cut you off, sorry, but to me, and I said it on the broadcast, but I do truly believe this in the sense of it doesn't matter who you're cheering for or if you're a player, which bench you're on. In the moment, obviously, if you're Minnesota, you're hoping nothing comes of it because you're trying to come back in the game. But you're sitting there in the back of your head, you're like, that's not right.
Well, it's just strange that it comes out even after he gutlessly punches forward in the face and gets injured, leaves the game.
Blueger doesn't do a great thing of spearing a guy from the bench either.
Yeah, those two are not the same. Right, and they end up 100%. Offsetting one another. You know, that's the thing I don't love is like that they're both offsetting one another, and one is clearly worse than the other one is. Right, so in that moment, I just don't understand how that was adjudicated because usually it seemed like Bick made the point. It seemed like they did everything they could to not call the 5-minute major. So they popped up some couple penalties. Here's 10 minutes, but let's do everything we can not to kill the game for the Wild. Essentially. If you're being cynical, that's what the way it comes out. Because if they get a 5-minute major, they're down in this game. Their playoff hopes could be in danger. Do they have the guts to make that call? To me, the answer is no.
And I'm really curious to see what happens, tonight, but tomorrow as they move on, if they're going to look at this.
And let's make this clear.
How can you not look at it?
Let's make this clear. Yeah. Like, I don't care if the Canucks win or lose anymore. This is not even about the Canucks. It's more about, I'm trying to make sense of a violent play that happened in the game and how it was adjudicated, which to me is just not good enough.
Yeah, this is about the safety of hockey players.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's not okay. As fans chanted in the arena, it's like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Beyond you can't do that. It's sickening. Because the fight was over. He even punched the ice as he went to ground as a recognition of like, oh, this is over. And then saw an opportunity and took another shot. And again, gutless, classless, whatever you want to call it. Same team that has Ryan Hartman on the team who's pile-drived a guy into the ice. And cried a foul and appealed, had that appeal reduced. Why would you expect any different from this organization right now? Here's Trenin in this spot on a play that everyone knows. Like, it's not even like we fall into the ice and we're still tussling and you get a random one. That's premeditated. It's like, oh, I've got an opportunity here to take this reckless shot, and he's done it.
There's a difference of throwing an extra real shot, and in that exact situation where you still have your hand on the guy's collar and you give a little jab to make sure he feels an extra one. Like, that stuff happens and that's fine. But just to bring it back, like, I just don't understand how they can look at they watch the review or the replay multiple times. It's the same stuff we're seeing. I don't understand how you watch that and not think it's a guy that clearly made a decision to throw an extra punch. It wasn't as they were falling and he was already throwing it, because that happens and it's not good when it does, but it happens. And, at the end of the day, you'd also have to understand that you're entering a fight and things do happen, but what you're not worried about generally going into it is, after the fight's done, I have to still protect myself. Because generally, once that fight ends, those linesmen come in, and the last thing you want to do is end up throwing an extra one and you end up hitting a linesman.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just, I don't know. The whole thing just leaves a sour taste in my mouth as far as how it was handled. But nonetheless, the game's over. Canucks lose 3-2, and we just hope Derek Forbert's going to be okay. That's my biggest thing. We'll see what the head coach has to say about it, too, and I'm sure he'll have some things to say about how that all happened. And we know a guy like Tuck, those old school, like that, you just don't do stuff like that. But nonetheless, Canucks had a 2-goal lead in this game, end up blowing it. A familiar script, right? We've seen the Canucks have a lead, have a hard time holding on to it, get to the extra frame, and then lo and behold, don't find a way to win in the extra frame. And, I wouldn't say it's a microcosm of the season. Some good, some bad, some hanging on, a little bit of everything, and not an unfamiliar game script in the end.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of, once they got the 2-goal lead, the third period kind of starts, and then especially the fight happens, there's a long review, and after that, they started sitting back a bit more and going back to kind of those flips out and just trying to survive. And which, like, that's already hard when the other team is just playing normal. Mm-hmm. This is February, and it's just a normal, Tuesday night that there's a game happening. That's already hard to play and hold a lead like that. But now you throw a team that's desperate, trying to make the playoffs. They can feel Calgary pushing. Like, there's a lot coming at you. So you know that they're going to come out aggressive. And you need to be able for them, like for the Canucks, they've played better recently, and throughout the year when they've had their good games, it's when they're skating. And when they keep attacking, not taking unnecessary chances or anything like that, but when especially the forwards get on their forecheck, they hold the puck down there pretty good. That's how now you're going to make Minnesota have to make plays through you instead of you're sitting back and they can, you know, like that Eriksson, Ek, Boldy, and Kaprizov line that, you know, seemed to barely get off in the third period. Like, they eat that up. Like, they have speed, they're strong, and they're big. So if you're sitting back and they're coming at you with a full head of speed, it's pretty easy for them to lower a shoulder. Well, now they've broken into the zone. There's someone else coming with speed, so there's plays to be made. It would just be, you know, it would have been nice because the Canucks played two really good periods that they deserve more out of this, and if they just stuck on the attack a little more, I think.
Yeah, we chatted and sat in the first intermission about how they held onto the puck. Think of Linus Karlsson hitting Marcus Pedersen 3 minutes into the game. That's the opening goal. And just in general, could they win in the offensive zone below the hash marks along the boards? You didn't really see that, and honestly, in the final 30, bleeding into the second period a little bit. And then, like, there were moments in the third period where five guys were behind the red line and just waiting for Wild players to advance. And if it was Kaprizov, he could snake his way through that. Faber had a couple of moments to be able to take the puck unpressured through his own zone. That sort of stuff, it may not happen on that play, but it's the wave of pressure that eventually mounts. And it could just be on a sneaky play where, you know, Hartman just throws a bouncing puck out in front. Foligno just has to steer it kind of in a direction and get it to go into to get the tying goal.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things. I mean, Brett and Kukotlum says, a masterclass of how to blow a lead and bore a crowd. They had 14 shots. That was a tough final 40 minutes to sit through. Brett in downtown, he mentions Whitecaps had 11 shots on goal in their match. but I get what the point, because they had such a good first, right? And they were, you know, I wouldn't say all over Minnesota, but even through the second period, I thought it was overall pretty even. Like, they did a really good job. And in the third, it just, there was just like no push, and ended up being, I mean, the most interesting things that happened were the Pedersen hit on Chisholm, and then all you know, before the 2-0 goal, and then obviously the whole Trenin situation that happened with Derek Forbert. But yeah, it's one of those things we've seen quite often where the Canucks, through parts of the game, will do a good job of generating, and then it just kind of gets away from them. And then that proverbial 60-minute effort of providing offense is tough to do. Now, obviously, you look at the centers down the middle, Ty Mueller makes his debut tonight. That's going to make an impact, but it's not an unfair comment about how the offensive production really tailed off after the first half of the game.
Was there anything you noticed, Landon, about how they were bringing the puck up the ice for Vancouver, or was it just, hey, they were relegating themselves to flip-outs?
Well, as it got later, it did get to the flip-outs a little bit, but even when they did carry the puck up, they're just, like, there wasn't that same, like, drive to the play. There didn't feel like there was a momentum kind of coming behind them and forcing them into the zone, where earlier in the game, well, I mean, right away, Sat just kind of talked about it, but, like, throwing it up to the right side, Karlsson had it. Garland gets the pass, and he makes that beautiful little sauce play to get to gain the line, and they go in. Like, that right there was how this team's more built to play, when because they have speed and they have some pretty creative players. So when you stretch out a zone like that, and you have a guy like Garland that can sit there and, you know, he's got some patience. Well, that lets the next guy come flying through the middle. Well, that backs off the D all of a sudden. Like, you need to work together a bit more to help push those D back. And now you can hold on to it. You don't have to dump the puck in and try and go chase it down again. Like, all of those things, again, like, for this Canuck team, I mean, we've said it a lot this year, but, like, everything, whether they play good or bad, it all hangs on are they skating or not that night. I really do think that, because when they're skating, that also means their passing's, you know, a lot more accurate. It's going tape to tape. There was a lot of bouncing pucks tonight that they struggled with. Well, honestly, both teams struggled with a bouncer tonight, but, like, the puck moves clean. Now you move clean. Now everything's moving up a bit faster, and you're making the defense have to make real-time decisions, not, you know, they come over, it dumps in, well, now you can get the guy on your back, you can shoulder check, you know where everything is. Like, it kind of sets the other team up for a breakout almost. But if you can hold on to a possession a little bit, pull someone out of position, well, now you can carry with possession, and that's how you can get your offensive game going a little more.
It felt through the neutral zone, especially in the final 40, they really had their own struggles. And I see this often from teams where defenses are able to just hold the blue line. And as you mentioned, when you're not moving, and especially from the forward group more so than the back end, because the back end, we chatted about this on the first submission, the mobility feels far different from what we saw from the first part of the season, but a lack of pace to kind of push defenders back, and they're able to just put their heels on the blue line essentially and force you to do something you don't want to do and start playing with bouncing pucks and everything like that to chip it in.
You're a soccer guy, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the old park the bus.
Yeah.
They just sat back there and they just... But again, though, like, if you're not going to force the issue yourself, you let other teams be able to do that. And the, you know, just think of, especially on the Canucks PK, you know, since, what was it, February 1st, their first in the league, doing unreal. And, you know, every time over to start, it's that Forbert, Pettersson, Bluger, and Suter. Like, when that four, you know, foursome is really kind of on it that night, they skate up the ice. They don't just sit back. But the more the forwards get up the ice, that lets the D come push up the ice a bit more so that when they do start to have to gain speed backwards, it's not starting at the blue line and you end up at the top of the circles and now you give an easy entry. They're able, forwards get up over the red line at least, you know, kind of halfway to the far blue line. Now the D can get up kind of more to the red line and now you can, as you're starting to gap up and you're getting your speed back, the plays at the blue line. And it's amazing how if you make a player make a decision at the blue line, how often that play gets fumbled or it feels rushed because they think they're going to be able to step in and all of a sudden, oh, my guy on the far side is going to be offside, so they end up throwing it away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, before we let you go here too, I didn't want to mention Jake DeBrusk, his 27th goal of the season, matches a career high, the third time he's hit 27 goals. And it's funny because the guys who are complimentary players, and I would classify DeBrusk as a complimentary top six guy, they've done their job for the most part for the team. It's come down to, you know, obviously they had Pedersen's been out and trying to get more out of players like that and not having another one with JT being gone. But what do you make of how he played and the fact that he's now getting closer to 30 goals on the campaign despite all the ups and downs?
Yeah, I think he had a pretty decent game. You know, it was a little bit of a different one. You know, Ty Mueller's playing his first game, and that's DeBrusk and Besser's centerman tonight. So, you know, they're obviously having to kind of help him along and make sure that he knows what's going on and kind of feeling good if they're, you know, not that he had really any mess-ups tonight by any means, but at the same time, when you're come from the American League the first time, you're used to being able to make the plays that you make down in the American League, and then you get up to this level and all of a sudden that time and space kind of disappears really quick, and it can be overwhelming at especially at the start. So that's where, you know, being with two older guys can help that along. But for DeBrusk, you know, it's nice when you see him early in the game get himself to the front of the net and get around pucks in that area, because just as I was saying earlier, for the Canucks, like, it's all about skating, really. And for DeBrusk, it's about getting himself to about 4 feet from around the net. He is very good in front of the net. He's good at getting pucks or sticks on pucks. You know, he had a tip tonight, but not only that, he's very elite at when that rebound pops. He has that hockey IQ to know just from whatever angle it's coming in on, what side it's going to drop out to. Like, he has that feel. And there's some games where, and it's generally when he's, you know, kind of in the down part of a goal-scoring streak, but at the same time, he'll start to, you know, early in the games, he'll start just kind of being on the outside, trying to find his ways in and that. And then tonight, he just kind of drives right in there, and you're like, okay, this is going to be one where he's going to be a bit more involved. And you know, you can tell he's kind of feeling it a bit right now.
I really like that play in the third when he was coming down the left wing and just tucked that puck inside and still got a shot off and through the defender as well. Nice little layer to his game as well. I did want to ask you about Nils Höglander. It's an assist tonight, obviously, on the power play goal. Minus two, which feels a little unfair because I thought he had a good game. Is there an element of growth that you see from maybe 3 months ago that we're seeing here in the past 5-6 weeks from Höglander?
100%. And I think one of the main ones that pops out to me right away is, you know, early in the year and in the past year, like, the one thing that you can never, any of us can ever argue or dispute with Nils Höglander is his effort. Like, that guy tries every second he's on the ice. But he'd either end up trying too hard and taking a penalty, or trying to make that one last play at the red line instead of just getting it in. Well, he seems to be understanding a little better now that, okay, if I just chip that through with my skating and puck retrieval strength, like, that's still an opportunity for me. If I make the move and beat him here, well, I still got two or three guys in front of me. So, like, right. I didn't really help myself. But he's a lot more dialed in on the puck. He doesn't seem to kind of get so frantic and as much right now. But the thing that I've really enjoyed watching is, like, his work in the offensive zone down behind the net. Like, he does those tight turns like Garland. But the difference with that is when Garland makes his tight turn, he already knows the play, like the pass that he's going to make next or what it is, because he's not as thick as Höglander. Like, he needs to be able to tight turn off that D and get away from him right away. Höglander is able to tight turn, kind of get his back out and push into that defenseman, and all of a sudden, now he takes that first stride and he's got a powerful first step. Like, he stepped back in the second period. He did a tight turn on, I forget who, but he takes that first step back to the net, and he's cleared about 3 feet from that defender. Like, all these little things are starting to kind of roll for him again. And, you know, I think he's going to have a really good year next year. I think that this last stretch here has kind of really set him up and shown him, like, exactly how, like, what his blueprint is to grab more ice and keep moving up the lineup, because, you know, he's gone from basically being, you know, Rick Tocchet's, like, he was the doghouse, not even in it, to gaining more ice time and clearly gaining some more and more trust from Tocchet as well.
And like Michelle from Langley says, Höglander's assist on DeBrusk's goal looks a lot like Miller, what he did on the power play. Something Bick was mentioning looked Miller-esque during the second intermission. We were talking about this during the game. But great stuff. Landon calling the game alongside Batch. And we'll see you around here. Two more games to go before the season's over.
All right. We'll see you around.
We'll chat again soon. And that is your game review on Sportsnet 650. You'll need more power and efficiency in your lineup. Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Sport with rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. A lot of reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, Bick, a lot of it is on the officiating. We spent the first 10 minutes of the postgame show talking about the whole Trennan situation. Seema says, NHL refereeing is the worst in all the sports with a replay. And her mentioning the replay is key. And, yeah, I mean, the officials did review the entire situation. They were on their iPad, as we mentioned earlier, and they still made whatever decision they made. Corey, the physio, NHL is such a trash league, so fans very upset with how this was adjudicated tonight.
Yeah, it seems very black and white, this whole scenario here. And the whole process of it, just operationally, we always talk just moments of simplicity for officials to cloud this one as much as it did. And as we said, leaves a sour taste in your mouth, just how that was all handled through that whole course here. 650, yeah. 650, sorry, go ahead.
Like this unsigned text, absolutely bogus officiating, not giving Trennan a match penalty for intent to injure. Somehow they find a way to even out the penalties. It's almost way too obvious. The NHL is trying to get the Wild into a playoff spot. I don't even like the Flames, and I'm pissed off for them. That's an unsigned text message. Yeah, because who cares about the Canucks and their results? If anything, them losing helps them perhaps get a better draft pick, right? So, like, none of us here care about the results, so to speak, but as far as the integrity of how it was handled, I think that is something people have issues with. Mike from Thunder Bay says, Forbert, in regards to the officiating, league has set things up with officiating hires, procedures, penalizing the free speech of coaches to take the expertise and accountability out of officiating. That's Mike from Thunder Bay. So fans are fired up over this here tonight, Bick.
Yeah, I almost wonder if instead of the instigator, they meant to do the aggressor.
Yeah.
That penalty, right? Because you can deem the guy the aggressor, and it could be a game misconduct in that scenario. look stunned at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll hear more of it as the show goes on. Let's take a phone call before we hit the break. Let's go to Langley, where we have Jake on the line. Jake, thanks for calling in, bud. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 3-2 overtime loss against Minnesota?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I'm not stunned. The officiating has been like this for years, and it's the wheel of justice when it comes to what exactly is and what's not a penalty, what exactly is and what's not a suspension. It's been going on for a long time, and you know, it's just I'm done getting mad about it, because it's like a constant cycle of negativity, and I'm gonna try to stay away from that when it comes to that specific scenario. But I'm not gonna stay away from it, because I don't know if this is a hot take or anything, and I'm not sure how much you guys talked about this. I actually came in a little bit late here, but there wasn't any real response by the Vancouver Canucks after that play for the last. You know, for the last part of the game. Like, I'm not saying you have to go and injure someone. Of course, I don't want anybody to do that. But, like, at least, like, where was, like, the fisticuffs? Throw some hands, get some shoving. Like, I didn't see any of that. Do you think that's something to concern about? Is it just because it's the end of the season? I don't know, man. I just don't like that there was no real true response in a mean-nothing game like this, even if they were up 2-1. I didn't like that. But as for the game itself, you know what, man? They're trying their best, and that's all I can really say about that. So thanks for taking my call, guys.
Hey, appreciate it, man. And I get it. Like, I don't disagree. Like, you want to see the team respond physically, but I think he answered his own question. Why didn't they? They had the 2-1 lead. Now, we can sit here and say, you know, it doesn't matter. These games don't matter. But they played like it mattered. They played like they wanted to win the hockey game. That's what they prioritized. I don't disagree. I like seeing people go after somebody like that. But now Trenton was out of the game. You would have to go after somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's fair game. But to answer the question, why didn't they? I think, you know, he somewhat answered it himself. They were playing for the victory more than anything else. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your thoughts as the show goes on here. We'll hear from the Canucks head coach, Canuck players, and a lot more on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Chisholm. He gets it free after a give and go with Brazeau and skates left wing to center and dumps it in behind the Vancouver net. And now behind the play, we get a fight. Trenton's dropped the gloves, and it's Derek Forbert. Trenton stumbled over the ice. Forbert comes around with a right hand. Trenton tackles him and then gave him a couple of shots while he was down on the ice. And then I think it was Teddy Bluger from the Canuck bench gave Trenton a bit of a whack with his stick, and Forbert is in trouble here, lying on the ice. He's holding his head, and one of the Canucks trainers is out here to attend to him as Trenton slams the door on the penalty box. And you wonder if there might be more in this than just a fighting major for Yakov Trenton, as he had Forbert down on the ice and then he piled on top of him and gave him a couple more hard right hands.
A couple solid ones that connected as well. And
Canucks lose 3-2 in overtime against the Minnesota Wild. Had a 2-goal lead in the third. Wild come back to tie it and win it in the extra frame. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them at dleamc.com. It's Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of reaction on Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in a little bit as well. And obviously, a lot of reaction as far as what happened between Trenton and Forbert. Adam, the former Bath guy, says the junior refs would have done a better job calling tonight's game. And as far as the Canucks' lack of toughness, Sean says we need to get so much tougher next season. And that's a sentiment that we're getting a lot of on the text inbox. They want the Canucks to respond and be tougher physically than what they have shown. What else are you seeing on the text inbox, Bick?
650-650. Chris in Maple Ridge wants to bring this part up, that in the fight, Forbert does
throw a punch on Trennan when his knees are on the ground. It's as he's falling. That's not uncommon.
Yeah.
Right? It happens. You're engaged. And as a guy is coming down, you do throw an extra punch. It was nowhere near the level of severity. I don't even know if that one hit cleanly. I think it was almost in the collarbone region. Nowhere near the level of severity than the one Trennan throws on the ground.
Well,
and we're talking about like linesmen that are on top of the guys.
He's on the ice and he's being restrained by linesmen essentially, right? So it's one of those things. And somebody texted in and said that they think the reason they didn't do it because they wanted to avoid the argument of a double standard because Forbert also punched Trennan while he was on his knee, like Chris was mentioning. So there is that sentiment at least being shared on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one from Sophie and Pitt Meadows. Embarrassing from Trennan. Cheap shot. Deserves to miss a couple games. More of the same from the Canucks, though. Weak on the forecheck. No fire. Need more next season. And I don't disagree about how meek the Canucks were in the third. I know the focus is on the lack of physical response, but it's one of those things we've seen the Canucks do quite often where they shrink in the final frame when they have a lead. And that's something we've seen quite a bit of. It was a very familiar storyline, Bick. Have a lead, blow it in the third, and lose it in overtime. It's something we have seen way too often in the season.
This will be their 11th drop point when leading after two. They'll become 27-1-8 when leading after two.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just not strong enough. When you got these opportunities to pick up points, obviously now it's a different situation because they're not going to the playoffs, but upon reflection, sorry, I guess it would be 10 drops points. Upon reflection at the end of the season, you're going to look at that and say, wow, we finished only a couple of points out of the playoffs. In winning positions, look how many points we dropped. And that type of mark, it's as far as points percentage when leading after two, it's going to be one of the lowest in the league. So that...
Yeah, like this text.
Just not good enough.
And also this one, unsigned. Canucks seriously don't have a clue how to play in OT. I mean, you're not wrong for having that sentiment because of how poor they have been in overtime. If they had a 500 record in overtime, Bick, 500 record in overtime, they're a playoff team.
They're coasting their way in.
Yeah.
Coasting.
Yeah.
But they...
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Mike is...
I'm always of the believer, it's like, you can handle your job in regulation.
For sure.
I get it. But... Given the potential of the team, OT shouldn't look like a foreign concept to them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Mike in Surrey says Canucks would be in the playoffs if they simply had a winning record 3-on-3. We're mentioning going 500. With their talent, how do they not? That is on the coaches. So Mike in Surrey puts the blame on the coaches for the lack of results in overtime. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the text inbox here as the show goes on. And I know people still have thoughts on the whole officiating aspect of the whole Trennan situation. We'll get to those. And we'll play some audio from Kevin Bieksa from the Hockey Night in Canada post-game panel. They were talking about the situation. So we'll play those thoughts, what he had to say about the situation with Trennan and Forbert. But before we do all that, let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, we'll just start with your assessment of the third period and what happened to allow them to come back into the game.
Well, I think we're up 2-0. We stopped making plays. The guys are getting antsy. It's been a kind of common theme sometimes with our team. We just need to relax. You know, a lot of young guys on lineup. We get some average guys, so that's understandable. But there's some plays there where you just got to kind of calm down. I thought we got a little. We were just kind of chipping pucks away when there was nobody around us. So those are things that you got to really can you work on how to deal under pressure. But you know, good effort.
We just talked to Marcus Pettersson. He called the punch on Forbert one of the worst things he's seen. Your reaction to it, and do you have an update on Derek?
I agree with him. No, I don't. I don't have an update on him yet.
Overtime has been a theme all year. Again today, did you see some of the same things that have plagued you earlier in the year?
Well, what did you see? Hoggy missed his man, poor guy. I mean, he's not out there. Usually he's not out on those things, and he missed his man. That's it. You know, it's not a microcosm of the, you know, it's just overtime's an individual mistake. So that's what happens. And, he's played good hockey and he missed his man. Move on.
What about just they had a lot to play for, right? I mean, the other teams you've played knew their positioning in the standings. You'll get that again with Vegas later. This team had a lot to play for. Was that a factor, you know, with you guys being out?
No, there's a factor that we have, you know, we got another guy coming up from Abbotsford, sticking him in the lineup, and we're trying to get him to get a taste of what it's like. We have certain guys in and out of the lineup. I think the guys have done a hell of a job. I cannot be mad at our team at all. So this is not a time to evaluate why we lost this game. I thought, but I will tell you, we have to learn how to play under pressure. And that's just, I don't care who it is, we have to continue to work on that. We will continue to work on that.
Rick, I wanted to pick up on something that you just said about overtimes and yeah. individual mistake. Do you mean that tonight it was an individual mistake, or in general when you lose an overtime?
This year there's been a lot of, you know, I don't know what the word is, a little careless mistakes on as cost us overtime. If you go back on all the overtimes, there's some carelessness that we have to clean up. Tonight's just a, you know, Hoggy's not usually out there, and he just lost his man. You know, it's man on man. He should have stays with the man. But you know, that's, you know, he'll learn. You know, that he's a young kid, and he'll just learn from it. It's not his fault. You know, we'll continue to work with these guys.
How much of that, not Hoggy's mistake, but yeah. how much of that making those mistakes in that in those key moments is related to what you're saying about playing under pressure?
Well, there's definitely something to that. You know. You know, you've been out there for 35 seconds. You're in a vulnerable situation. You know, you don't want to try to make a high-risk play. You know, you live for another shift. You give it to somebody else. You get off, get somebody on. I think what we're doing is, you know, we're trying to make something that's not there. And then what happens, you know, you got good, usually the best players are in overtime, right, both teams. So when you make a crucial mistake, you give a team a two-on-one or a breakaway, they're usually going to score. So I think it's just the understanding of when you're vulnerable, when to go for it, when not to. And it's on me. So I got to start teaching it better. And maybe we got to practice it even more. You know, you usually don't practice at a lot of it, but might have to look into that, obviously, a lot more this for next year.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated since 1971. Visit any of their three locations and talk to their in-house design consultants, or visit them online at mytiletown.ca. So the head coach, he didn't say much about the Forbert Trenin situation, but he did agree with Marcus Pedersen's assessment that it was one of the dirtiest things that he has seen, and provided no update on Derek Forbert either after the game. But that's about as close as, you know, talk it gets to really calling somebody out post game, like on anything. So I think it's pretty clear how he views that entire situation.
That was rather docile from Rick Tocchet, considering he's an upholder, you would imagine, of the code,
yeah.
and his own playing style and playing career.
I think he's also one of those guys that doesn't like to get into it with players, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's like he just said it that way, keep it to that. Like, you know, you don't see him really chirp players either from the bench. Like, you know, there are some coaches that just try to avoid that, especially opposing players, so just kind of stay to the facts as much as possible, so to speak. But stuck to that. Now, mention the OT individual mistakes. Now, I don't disagree with individual mistakes causing a lot of issues for the Canucks in overtime, because JT had, what, 4 or 5 that cost the Canucks mm-hmm. games before he got traded. Myers had, like, 3 in a row. Besser's had a couple. Mm-hmm. Hoglander had one here tonight, like you mentioned. Was trying very hard to not be overly critical of Hoglander, though. But yes. I think I just mentioned like 10, I think, right
yeah.
now. You know, 2 here, 5 there, 3 there. That's 10 of individual mistakes.
You're
in OT.
You're almost at 13.
You know, so he's not wrong about individual mistakes costing them. But, you know, like some people would text in and say they put that on the head coach. Mm-hmm. But when we talk individual mistakes, like, you know, sometimes it comes down to an individual making mistakes too, and blowing an assignment, or just, you know, 3-on-3. There's a lot of space. Things can happen. He didn't agree at all that it was a microcosm of OT this season, despite the fact that it was a mistake and they've made other mistakes.
Didn't really want to pin it on Hoglander either, even though it's an individual mistake. And Hoagie, it's man-to-man.
You know, you can tell.
It's his guy, but he doesn't want to pin it. It's okay. Remember that time you said something? You pronounced my name differently.
Yes.
Like, that was an individual mistake.
Yes.
And you're not normally in that position to do it, so it's not your fault. Like, come on. Like,
it's my fault. I made the mistake.
It's on Hoglander in that play. But, again, I think he's really encouraged by what's happened here recently. But he knows Hoglander. He's not going to go out of the way to bury the guy. I get it.
And I think
we can also just call it. It's like, it's his guy. He's going down Broadway.
And I think it goes back to that entire – I think that his entire post-game availability – he even, you know, said they have to relax. They got antsy in the third. Didn't like how, you know, they chipped puck. No one was around them. They should have made better plays. But he was very quick to say, you can't be mad at the team tonight. Like, Mueller got called up to play, right? You're talking about a team that's very depleted when it comes down to the middle of the ice, and they're playing a team like Minnesota that is a better team than the Vancouver Canucks, too. So I get it. He doesn't want to be mad at the team. He doesn't want to be mad at Hoagie because Hoagie's, you know, had a really strong game. But...
plus, he's only got a handful of days till some exit interviews, right?
Yeah.
You're going to bury a guy and then sit in a room with him and be like, all right, so here's some things you got to work
on. Yeah. No, so I get that he was frustrated about certain trends and they were problematic, but tonight's not the night to go in on the guys, especially given the roster that they have. So I understand, you know, the tightrope he was walking, so to speak. Todd says, though, it sounds like a coach that is coming back next year, because he also mentioned we have things we have to work on and we will work on, and they might have one more practice this season, mm-hmm. right? So... it's one of those things where he sounds like it. Now,
it's going to be a heck of a practice if they're going to clear up a lot of things.
Right, right. Now, Elliot Friedman mentioned today on headlines that a decision on Rick Tocchet's future in Vancouver should come pretty quick after the season ends. So we shouldn't be hanging in suspense for much longer than the next week or two, hopefully. So we should know relatively soon what the situation is going to be like for the Canucks head coach with the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah, so keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit more of them as the show goes on here. Was there something else from the coach you wanted to point out or talk about?
No, I just agreed with the idea that like the chipping the pucks away when nobody was around us. Even if you go back to the Foligno goal, like Quinn Hughes threw the puck up the wall, Marcus Patterson threw the puck up the wall on that play, and it just that wave of pressure eventually... engulfs you, and it's just a nothing play, but two veteran players you would look at and say, do you have to make that play and chip it out of the zone? And the Patterson one doesn't get out of the zone and leads to the host of issues, but makes all the sense in the world of why they found themselves back in this spot here.
Yeah, Rick and Vic says, problem is the Canucks are just not making the other team make mistakes. We just sit back way too much and then we make the mistake. And it's true, you have to put pressure on the opponent. You have to force the opponent into some tough situations as well. And the Canucks certainly did not do that in the third. Now, I mean, the Wild, to their credit, played the third as if their season was on the line. And it was, in some ways, on the line here because they needed to pick up points to control their fate still, especially after losing against Calgary last night in Calgary. But for the Flames, they do get some help. The St. Louis Blues lose in overtime against the Seattle Kraken tonight. So the door is slightly open still for the Calgary Flames to make the postseason. So we'll see how that goes for them. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of them as the show goes on. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll hear from the Canucks captain as well, Quinn Hughes, and hear what he has to say too. Anything you want to hit before we go to the break here, Bick, and come back?
650-650. Jay, microcosm of the Canucks, micro Canuckism, sorry, of the Canucks season, as I mispronounced that one. Doug in Victoria, Carlson played a solid game when he was on the ice. Never saw him in the third, battling on the boards all night long. So that one's from Doug in Victoria. So he actually got the most shifts in the third period. He got 6 shifts, but his ice time was actually the least in that period. He ended up with 3 minutes and 23 seconds in the third period. On a hole tonight, 13 minutes from Linus Karlsson. We chatted to him in the first intermission, and you do see the confidence growth for him and just the way he set that play up. He gets the entry, is able to pull up, scan the ice, open his body up to the middle of the ice as well, and no Wild players pressured him. He was just able to hit Marcus Pettersson to help create that goal. But there's a lot coming from Linus Karlsson, and he echoed those sentiments that he feels far more confident now than he did earlier in the season when maybe he would have just chipped that puck in and credited all the work that he's been doing in Abbotsford.
I like a lot of what I'm seeing from Linus Karlsson, and if he can get a little bit quicker too and stronger for next year, you saw the physical aspect as well. He got into it with Brock Faber. Another situation where Faber probably should have been, I guess him and Carlson both could have been penalized. But I get...
I mean, Faber shot the puck after the whistle had already gone.
Yeah.
So, Carlson's going to go after him.
Yeah, and then after that, he clearly cross-checks him, and then they kind of punches each other, too. And again, that's a situation where the officials didn't want to take away one of the Wild's best players out of the game. It's pretty clear. They didn't want to give him a penalty, so they gave neither guy a penalty, right? But in so many situations, in other moments of a game, that happens. Both guys are at least getting a penalty. At least one guy is getting one, and didn't happen in that situation either. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit more of those as the show goes on. We'll hear from Canuck players, and we'll break down the goals and get to the three stars on the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It's Canuck Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canuck Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
For Faber at the line. Now to Kaprizov, left wing. He shoots wide of the target, and Zuccarello has it at the right point in the Vancouver zone. He'll drop it to Kaprizov on the boards. 2:15 left in overtime. Now for Zuccarello, in alone on net. He scores! Matt Zuccarello dekes out Kevin Lankinen, beats him stick side, and the Wild come back. After trailing 2-0 through 40 minutes, they beat the Canucks 3-2 in overtime.
Well, what did you see? Hoggy missed his man, poor guy. I mean, he's not out there. Usually he's not out on those things, and he missed his man. That's it. You know, it's not a microcosm of the, it's just overtime's an individual mistake. So that's what happens. And, he's played good hockey, and he missed his man. Move on.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. After a 3-2 overtime loss against the Minnesota Wild, a familiar place for the Canucks, blew a two-goal lead in the third, lose in overtime, something they've done quite regularly this season. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. A lot of discussion about that overtime winner by Matt Zuccarello, the mistake by Hoagie, and how he deked Lankinen to put the puck behind him and ultimately win the game. But let's work our way back and talk about the other four goals here, Bic, that got us to that game winner. And it was the Vancouver Canucks initially taking the 1-0 lead off a Marcus Pettersson shot. And, Marcus Pettersson, I think his game was very much similar to the Canucks. Really good for 40, maybe not so good in the final 20, but really good in the first 40. And he makes it 1-0 and a nice heads and a nice patient play from Linus Karlsson to allow that chance to happen.
Yeah, Mancini just goes up the wall on a loose puck in the defensive zone, and Bluger taps it to Karlsson, and he enters, holds on to it, pivots to face up towards the center of the ice and trying to make a play, and holds on to the puck. And he chatted with us in the first intermission and said, hey, earlier I would have just chipped that puck in and you go work below the line. This time he is able to see what pressures are coming towards him. Nobody pressures him, so he holds. And it's enough time for Marcus Pettersson, who had activated early enough, but a long distance to cover, now gets there, full head of steam entering the zone, clean take, works around Ryan Hartman easily, and lifts that shot to the top corner, short side, on Filip Gustavsson.
Yeah, and it made it 1-0. Now, Marcus Pettersson picked up a point there, his 11th with the Canucks in 29 games now, his first goal as a Vancouver Canuck. And something that Rick Tocchet spoke about before the game, he was asked about the Canucks generating more offense recently, and he said a lot of it comes down to their defense providing more offense from the back end, and that is being borne out in the numbers as well. When the Canucks, before the acquisitions of Marcus Pettersson and Mancini, and then the promotion of DPD, Friedman, Brisebois, Juulsen, and Desharnais had combined to play 77 games for the Canucks. Over those 77 games, those four players combined for 3 points. After tonight, Marcus Pettersson, DPD, and Mancini have combined for 17 points in 69 games. So far more production from the back end from those three players than the previous four guys are playing those roles when injuries were happening. Plus, Desharnais was playing a big role. So was Juulsen for this team. And you're seeing the Canucks generate more offense from the back end because of that as well.
And so far this season, they've got 100 and actually, pending today's points, they will have 181 points from D-men.
this season, which puts them tied for about 7th or 8th, pending what happened across the league today with the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think those are updated just yet, but top 10 in the league. As far as points percentage from D-men, they're second in the league, right behind the Colorado Avalanche. Look, a lot of that legwork is done by Quinn Hughes, obviously. But as this team needs to show that they can score more goals, they are getting point production from their back end. And it's underscored by everything that you just said there of the guys that have been moved on and where they are now. And you just see a baseline of just natural offensive ability. We talked about a Mancini play where he kind of darted into the slot earlier, took a pass, and just didn't take it cleanly. But you can just see just a little bit more mobility from the Canucks blue line, and then obviously Marcus Pettersson gets that first goal.
Yeah, absolutely, and that created a lot of offense. And Quinn Hughes, he's a big reason why the Canucks have so many points from the back. He said 180 points?
It'll be 181 now tonight because Marcus Pettersson and Quinn Hughes each got points.
181, and 75 of those points are from Quinn Hughes. He got a 75th point on the Canucks' second goal when they took a 2-0 lead on the power play, Bic. It was a bit of an undisciplined penalty by Zach Bogosian slashing Dakota Joshua, led the Canucks to get on the power play, and it was a pretty poor power play for the most part. They had a hard time getting set up. Their entries weren't working, but eventually they got set up, and then Quinn Hughes finds Hoglander. And then Hoglander, well, gets a nice shot off before Jake DeBrusk does something he's done a lot of, and that's tip pucks in front of the net.
Yeah, they had some trouble getting the entry, eventually made it work, and they play with it up high, and it just buys Hoglander some time to circle on that left flank like we've seen JT Miller do so often in seasons past and games past here this year. As Michelle from Langley, I believe, texted in earlier, that it felt reminiscent of what JT did, and he just takes it in stride from Quinn Hughes, just lays it perfectly, top of the circle, just gets a shot off, and there's DeBrusk to take that puck from high to low and beats Philip Gustafson to 2-0.
Yeah, Quinn Hughes gets a 75th point. It's his third straight year he's got 75 or more points, the seventh time in NHL history that has happened for a defenseman, and the first time since Ray Bourque did so. And stats that Dan Riccio shared on the pregame show today ahead of the Wild and Canucks game. But in the third, that is when the Minnesota Wild started storming back, their season somewhat on the line. I mean, they would not have controlled their fate any longer if they would have held that scoreline and lost in regulation. And Brock Faber, who was an absolute menace in this game, he brings them back within one, Bic.
A centering pass initially that goes to Marcus Pettersson. He doesn't handle it cleanly. Then Boldy tries a centering pass, and Garland intercepts this one. But he bumps into Hronek. It squirts into the slot, and Faber just quickly snaps it blocker side. And the Wild are on the board early on in that third period.
Yeah, and that was the moment the Wild started really growing into the game a lot more. And then with just over, 6 minutes to go in the period, Marcus Foligno scored to tie things up at 2, Bic.
Marcus Pettersson going up the wall, and it's picked off by Brazo. He quickly gives it to Hartman and doesn't do much with it. Just throws a bouncing puck out in front, and Pettersson's trying to recover. Net front, and Marcus Foligno's there to get enough of a shot off and kind of shovel it past Lankinen. 2-2.
And it's too bad because, you know, we talked about Marcus Pettersson. He was outstanding in this game. And then, you know, the back half of the third, not as much. Now, he played a lot of minutes tonight, 25, but he was physical, threw a massive hit on Declan Chisholm. Chisholm had to leave the game. It was a clean hit, though. Elbow was tucked. It looked like Chisholm hit his head against the glass, and then he looked like he was really woozy trying to get off the ice. But a clean hit from Marcus Pettersson, and got the goal as well, but not the best third period. And of course, we spoke about the Zuccarello goal quite a bit in overtime, and that is your game winner, 3-2. And that brings us to the three stars of this game. And there was some deliberation here about who should be the Canucks' third star. We decided to go with Marcus Pettersson. Now, there were people that texted in and said Kevin Lankinen was the Canucks' best player tonight. And you know what? He had the shutout through first 40. He made a lot of saves. But he was also giving up a lot of change, and there were a lot of loose pucks in the middle.
He got fortunate on the early whistle there with Brock Faber as well.
Yeah, and that could have been, you know, we spoke about that altercation afterwards. That easily could have been a goal if that whistle didn't happen. And also, there were a lot of times, and I even turned to you and said, man, there are a lot of pucks in the middle here that the Canucks were just clearing out, but there were a lot of opportunities there. So, he made some saves. He was good for the most part, but I don't know if he was good enough to be a star, and that's why he went with Marcus Pettersson third.
I do think that through 40 minutes, Marcus Pettersson was far and away the Canucks' best player.
I agree. Now, Tommy and others say Kevin was, as in Lankinen, but we go with Marcus Pettersson for the third star.
We're sticking our necks out on a limb here because I know there was a tough third period, obviously, with Marcus Pettersson. But for the 40, in a game where, again, we're talking about 14 shots on goal for the Vancouver Canucks.
And the second star of the game is Matt Zuccarello. Gets the overtime winner. Had some nice offensive moments, too, for the Minnesota Wild. And your first star also for the Minnesota Wild. It's hard not to give it to Brock Faber, who had a goal, had an assist, and played a whopping 33 minutes and 28 seconds for the Minnesota Wild here tonight. So it's hard not to go with Brock Faber after he played the way he did and also got an assist on the game-winning goal in overtime.
Yeah, and obviously the goal is a huge moment. We talked about the moment earlier where Hoglander made a great play in the defensive zone and tried to activate into the offensive zone, and who breaks up this pass? It's Connor Garland trying to knock it in. It's Brock Faber. Just moments throughout the course of the game, just suppresses, transports the puck, and obviously gets the goal too.
Yeah, and those are your three stars brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Shop Angry Otter Liquor's three stars, beer, wine, and spirits. 3-2 final, Minnesota Wild beating the Vancouver Canucks. And keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. I know Brock Besser took some criticism tonight. Kevin and Kelowna and Saeed from North Van both, don't like his game, said he was a bit of a no-show and that perhaps, they should put some young guys to play with experience instead. I don't know if Besser was that bad, as people mentioned him being here tonight. But it is interesting, though, because Besser mentioned yesterday when he spoke to Ian McIntyre, that when there are a lot of distractions, he's not at his best. And he also mentioned that it's unlikely he's coming back to Vancouver. There are a lot of discussions about whether he's coming back to Vancouver or not in the media. He seemed like a player distracted yet again tonight a little bit, right? And it seems like there are a lot of those things that have been plaguing him this season. And it seemed like that may have been a factor again tonight. Because I saw a guy who was trying, but a guy who just wasn't making the plays you expect him to make the way he has, at least in the last couple weeks here.
Three shot attempts, all of them blocked by Brock Besser tonight in 20 minutes of ice time as well.
Yeah. All right. And not a ton there. But yeah, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Before we get back to more of your thoughts, let's get the thoughts of one of the Canuck players. We'll get to more on the other side as well.
Is it Marcus?
Yes, Marcus Pettersson.
Okay, actually, before we get to that.
Let's get to it first. Okay. Here's Marcus Pettersson post-game after a 3-2 loss against the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, it was tough. We were defending a lot in that game, I thought. Some more plays to be made, and I think we kind of gave it away to them too much and let them come at us.
Take me through the overtime winner.
We had possession for a while, and then they obviously got possession. It's always tough when teams start crisscrossing. We've got to make sure we mark our man and stick with them. I think when we get crossed up like that in overtime is when we lose our guy and kind of start staring at the puck a little bit. So I think that's what happened. So for sure something we got to – I mean, what do we have now, 13 or 14 overtime losses? So those are important points.
How about for you late in the year to score your first as a Canuck? What does that mean to you ahead of the offseason?
Obviously always fun to score. Maybe not known to score and maybe not why I was brought over, but it's always fun. But, too bad we couldn't get the result, you know. I thought even though we were defending a lot, we defended hard. Kind of had some giveaways. I had one myself when I tried to go off the glass and hit a stick and they keep it alive and they're a desperate team. They need this point. So, I think we kind of handed it to them by giving them the puck too much.
Your reaction to the incident with Forbert?
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. I think it was one of the dirtiest things I've seen. So, we'll see what the league does. I hope Forbert is okay. I haven't seen him now after. That was a scary punch, and I didn't like it at all.
That's Marcus Pettersson, who says the Trenin punch on Forbert while he was on the ice, one of the dirtiest things he has seen. And on the other side, we'll delve into that a bit more. We'll play what Kevin Bieksa had to say about it as well on Hockey Night in Canada after the fact. Plus, we have another development in the whole scoring penalty summary situation.
Dun, dun, dun!
And if you're wondering if they're making it up as they go, there's more credence to that, perhaps, on how they adjudicated the whole situation with Trennan and Derek Forbort and what the call on the ice was, what it was changed to, and it's been another change after the game. We'll get to that and more, and we'll hear from more Canuck players on the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This time they gain the line, though, and Quinn Hughes has it left point. Into the high slot for Pugh Suter. Now to the right wing side for Brock Besser. To Hughes. Left circle, Hoglander with a shot. He scores! Niels Hoglander fired it for the left circle, and Jake DeBrusque parked in front, got a piece of it. It's 2-0 Canucks. And DeBrusque finds the back of the goal for his team leading 27th.
And for the Canucks, it's about they finally get that zone entry. They're able to hold it in. Quinn Hughes saves it at the line. But as they start moving it around, they get it to Suter in the middle. And what that does, it brings all four penalty killers a little bit tighter into the middle. And he taps it back out. It rips it back across to Quinn Hughes, who gives it to Hoglander, who's coming with a head of speed. And because of that, now he's got a good lane to the net, a good shot. And DeBrusque is able to just get a little bit of a tip on it to get it underneath that blocker of Gustafsson.
DeBrusque is 27th goal of the season, matching a career high. Not enough. Despite a 2-0 lead, Canucks lose 3-2 in overtime against the Wild. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. Ian in Regina says, it's difficult to win when you only get 14 shots on goal. They seem to lack speed. They did play well defensively for the most part. I'm glad we got 1 point and the outcome hurts the Flames, who I can't stand. Ian in Regina. So, Ian wants to see the Flames miss the playoffs. Now, as far as what happened with Trennan and Forbort, Colin from Caribou says, forget the direct hard punch to a down opponent is bad enough, but also made Forbort's head bounce off the ice. The trainer wasn't holding a towel to Forbort's cheek as he went off. He was holding a towel to the back of his head. Colin from Caribou texting in. And Tyler says, when you choose as an official to not make a call because it may impact the game drastically, it impacts the game drastically. You're right. If you don't call the game the way it's supposed to be called, you are impacting the game. And I agree with that philosophy in general. And, Bick, we have an update on the penalty summary on that whole situation.
So as you laid out initially, it didn't fit the mold of an instigator because he didn't instigate the fight.
No.
And it was written initially as instigator.
Yes.
And as I mentioned earlier, the way it was all doled out felt far more in line with how they assess the aggressor.
Yes.
That has now been changed.
So it is the aggressor now?
It is aggressor.
Okay.
It's unsportsmanlike conduct, fighting major, and aggressor is the way it has been deemed here.
So what you can say now is, after the fact, this makes more sense as far as how it was called, because it made no sense based on how it was called earlier. But are you doing it after the fact because this is how you called it, or did you make such a mess out of it that now you're calling it this after the fact?
After the audit? Let's review what's happened and let's get it right in the game score, even though we didn't do it right in real time, and we can get it in the game score correctly.
Yeah, I suppose. But don't forget, though, first they said it was a misconduct.
Yes.
Like a game misconduct was what they said initially. And that was changed initially.
The aggressor comes with a game misconduct.
Yeah. But initially they said, then they took it out.
Correct.
But so the whole thing was very confusing. Again, like if you were wondering if they were making it up as they go, you would be excused for wondering so based on how this
unfolded. So I'll read 46.2 here. The aggressor in an altercation shall be the player who continues to throw punches in an attempt to inflict punishment on his opponent who is in a defenseless
or who is an unwilling combatant. A player must be deemed the aggressor when he's clearly won the fight, but he continues throwing and landing punches in a further attempt to inflict or injure an opponent who is no longer in a position to defend himself. A player who deemed the aggressor of the altercation shall be assessed a major penalty for fighting and a game misconduct. Who is a player who has been deemed to be the aggressor of an altercation will have to We'll have this recorded as an aggressor of an altercation for statistical and suspension purposes. A player who is deemed both an instigator and aggressor of the altercation shall be assessed the instigator minor penalty, a major penalty for fighting, a 10-minute misconduct, the instigator, and a game misconduct, aggressor. So it's the first one there of the aggressor and the major penalty for fighting in a game misconduct.
So we'll see if this also leads to supplemental discipline. Because it left the door open for, hey, we don't think there was anything wrong with the punch initially, like with how it was kind of called. But now they're very much saying that that is how they viewed it. Now, as far as how some former players view the situation, post-game on Hockey Night in Canada, Kevin Bieksa, a former Canucks defenseman, who's also a noted fighter, and also Luke Gazdick, another, I know he's not everybody's favorite with the Canucks, but another guy that fought in the National Hockey League. And both those guys and the Hockey Night in Canada panel were talking about this post-game, and here's what they had to say about Trenin punching forward while he was down on the ice.
Let's do the fight. Jakob Trenin, obviously, and Derek Forbert. Kevin, why don't you start?
So I think most of the controversy is at the end of the fight, but you see the fight happen here, and Forbert doesn't fight a ton. He's a big dude. Trenin fights a little bit more, but mutually kind of agree to fight here. And I think the problem is they fall pretty early, and Forbert gets a couple of his punches, and then when they're on the ground, Trenin's going to get up quicker, and he's going to throw this punch. And I mean, this we could debate this all night long, and there's different theories and opinions. To me, this goes back to the Chatfield when he threw the guy. There's not a whole lot of rules in hockey fights, and everyone talks about the code and honor and what we should and shouldn't do. I think the fact of the matter is protect yourself right to the end, right till the linesman get in. Trenin throws that punch. He ends up getting a 2-5 and a 10, but we understand that's the instigator. He didn't get anything supplemental for hitting the guy on the ice. And Luke, you fought all the big boys, so you guys had a code and a respect where you didn't do that for the most part to each other. I had to scrap and fight some different kind of guys. I threw a couple on the ground. I got hit with a couple on the ground. So I don't know how I feel about that. Obviously, if it happens to you, you don't like it. But also, I've been hip tossed before by Matt Green, and I had to throw one when we got to the ground just to even the score.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where you and me disagree a little bit. I don't want to say I never bought into this whole code unwritten rule thing. I think there was just a notion of respect between tough guys. And I think as soon as you're down and helpless, that's over for me.
That's the respect is the key thing. If I didn't respect a guy, I would hit him on the ground.
That's another thing,
if
too.
If I did,
right?
I would.
There are some guys, 90 to 95% of the guys that I fought, I was genuinely not mad at. Yeah. You know, there's one of every 10 that I'm, you know, retribution for somebody or something. Maybe some guy's just a prick. But most of the time, I wasn't angry fighting. So I had no reason to punch a guy while he's helpless on the ground. When I see that with Trenin, I think that's gutless. I have no time for any of that at all. I understand it's a fight. You're willing, like the two guys willingly oblige, engage in there. But I think if a linesman's on top of you and you're on top of someone, it's over.
Two times in my career, my very first fight was against Byron Richie in Vancouver. And I was so hyped up because I was basically told before the game, if I don't fight, I'm getting sent down. So after the fight, crowd's going nuts. I hit him once on the ice, and Aginla did not like that. And he was already in the box, and he gave it to me for a full 2 minutes in the box. You young prick, like, you're going to... And I deserved it, right? I was a young, hyped-up guy, and I kind of regret that because I ended up playing with Byron Richie. He's a great guy. And then Matt Green, I just mentioned, just because we dropped the gloves, and he basically picked me up and just tossed me like a rag doll on the ice. So that wasn't a very good feeling, so I had to throw one, so... I see your side for sure, but I guess it does come down to the respect.
That's Kevin Bieksa and Luke Gazdick discussing it as two guys who had their fair share of fights in the National Hockey League. And, you know, even Bieksa had some confusion. He said, you know, based on how it was called, he didn't get a penalty for punching Forbert on the ice. But as we just discussed a few minutes ago after the change was made, that is indeed what he was penalized with. But, again, it goes back to the way it was all handled led to a lot of confusion, and it seemed like the wrong thing was being called because it was the wrong thing being called until it was corrected. So even Bieksa thought, oh, I guess maybe it wasn't that bad because they didn't say it was wrong, but they did say it was wrong. And we'll see if there's supplemental discipline for this too.
This is the stuff that's so frustrating because this isn't a on-the-fly judgment of a play. This is, hey, we can take a beat. We can look at the film. We can...
We know the rule book, right?
We know the rule book. Like, when I say operations of officiating, this is the stuff I'm talking about.
It's pretty bad.
You've got clarity of time here. And
they took their time.
And they took their time. And it hasn't been assessed correctly here.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't announced correctly. Like, the process of this was not clean. Like, we understand, like, a hook happens, and you're like, oh, I missed it, or I didn't see it from my angle, and what? That happens, man. That is real-time speed, and things are going to get missed. This is – just apply the rule book. Again, you got it right at the end.
Yeah.
But in the middle, you're leaving a lot of people in states of confusion here.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, the state of confusion. And I think a lot of us were confused by – we started the post-game show talking about how was that all handled, and at least we got some clarity here towards the end. And we heard, obviously, from – Marcus Pedersen, who mentioned one of the dirtiest things that we have seen, and that he has seen, as far as how other Canuck players felt about the game here tonight. Let's hear from the Canucks captain. Here is Quinn Hughes meeting with the media post-game, talking about what happened in the third period initially.
I mean, they're just pressing. They're just pressing. They want to make plays, and you know, we're just, yeah. They're making more plays than us, that's it.
You're playing a lot right now, and, you know, mathematically we know where this team is. For you, how much do you want to keep playing at this stage, just kind of given where things are at?
What do you mean?
Well, just, you know, there are some who believe that maybe, given the fact that there's not been a lot at stake, maybe that you need to play less at this time of year. You've been asked.
Oh, personally?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It doesn't feel like I... It's hard for me to gauge how much I'm playing. Like, sometimes I don't know if I played, you know, 22 or 27. It's just how I feel sometimes. So I was actually surprised how much I played today just looking at it a couple seconds ago. So I feel fine. And we also had, you know, Forbes go down there in the third. So
what was your takeaway from that play, you know, and the fight and how it went down in the late shot?
Yeah, obviously... hate that, you know, that happens, you know, that he's trying to stick up for me too. That obviously doesn't feel too good, but I mean, Forbes is a great teammate and you know, definitely a competitive guy. You just said it, you know, we're out of the playoffs and he doesn't, you know, there's a lot of guys that wouldn't do anything and he doesn't look the other way, but I didn't see the shot. They said it was a five, so apparently it was pretty dirty and I don't know what he was doing, you know, the circus act after getting kicked out, but I think, you know, obviously there's got to be a level of respect, so I haven't seen the shot again, but yeah.
Quinn, what's been so difficult about overtime this season?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Quinn, you talked a little bit earlier this week about wearing the C and leading this team. I'm wondering what sort of influence the Canucks have had on you this season in terms of playing that role. What have you been able to learn from them?
I mean, they're obviously very passionate and, you know, love coming to the games and cheering for us and rooting for the Canucks. And it's, you know, an honor to play in front of them. So obviously want to, you know, bring your best effort and felt that way since, you know, my first game here.
That is Quinn Hughes after the game, and you know, I mentioned he felt bad at Forbert because Forbert was sticking up for Hughes, who Trennan had hit, and now he's obviously hurt, and we don't have an update on his situation.
And reference the circus act,
yeah,
when he was getting kicked out. Shout out to Kiefer Sherwood, who was waiting at the red line.
Oh, man, we wanted the Canucks to win because
we would have talked to Kiefer Sherwood.
Sherwood and be like, what did you say to him? We wanted to find out what he had to say to him.
Trennan, A, went after the official.
Oh, before, as soon as he got kicked out, he went to the official and started going off at the official. And that's when I was like, why? Like, you just punched a guy while it was on the ice. Like, how can you possibly?
Now, maybe it was in reference to what we've discussed earlier. Like, he was going down on a play, and Forbert got an extra shot in.
Oh, maybe. Who knows, right? Maybe that's part of it. But, yeah.
As he was going towards the bench and being escorted by the linesman, right about where the faceoff dots are, Kiefer Sherwood was waiting at the red line and said something.
Yeah, said something.
And tried spinning back and wanted to go round two with someone.
Didn't get it.
And the circus act ensued, and the linesman was on that one.
Yeah.
Tussling with Trennan.
Yeah, certainly. And that
looking like a young Bick Nizar with the hold me back attitude.
Hold me back.
I got him, guys. Hold me back.
Get angrier when somebody holds him back. And as soon as I let go, you're like, I'm good.
I conveniently stand next to my biggest best friend. I was like, hold me back. Hold me back.
Hold me back. All right, now I'm ready to go. Yeah. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Does not look like we're getting IMAC tonight.
Late game.
And we wanted to talk about a few other things, too. Basketball, Phil mentions, would it not have been nice if the officials would have to speak to the media after the game like they do in the NBA and NFL? Yes, of course. And the other thing Basketball Phil mentions, when does Vilander sign? It's because, I mean, his season was over tonight no matter what, win or lose. But BU lost. So now they didn't get the championship, unfortunately. But his season his season has come to an end. How quickly does this move? I don't know, but I would imagine, just like Elliot mentioned about Rick Tocchet, a decision should come quickly after the season. I think a decision is coming quickly here for Vilander, too, after his season has come to an end.
Yes.
The only question is, there's always a possibility he goes back to college, right? That exists. It's door number three. But it's more than likely going to be either he signs and plays one game for the Canucks, or he signs and for next year and then goes to Abbey to play in the playoffs. To me, it's one of those two outcomes.
It would be very beneficial for him, too, to make that deal now, because lightest burning of a year ever.
It's easy, right? Yeah. It helps him. Now, it's not always beneficial depending on your contractual situation after 2 years, but... Yeah. Nonetheless, there are positives and negatives, but it looks like Vilander is soon going to be a Vancouver Canuck unless things really go sideways and decides to go back because he wants to get another shot at getting that title with BU. But it doesn't look like that's the case at the very least at the moment. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how all this goes. We'll get to some more of your texts, but let's also go to the phone boards. And our friend Gary has been waiting patiently in Maple Ridge to get on the show. Gary, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight after 3-2 loss in overtime against Minnesota?
Well, I talked to Eddie this evening about the unfortunate fight. And I'm a 66-year-old guy that's seen everything, including a Bobby Clark kick to the face of a player basically in Forbort's position, and he didn't get anything because they didn't see it. Well, in this case, everybody saw it, and in my opinion, I just heard Kevin BX's thought, and by the way, nice suit, gotta say that, but I wanted to say this, the referees screwed it all up. It should have been 5-2-5 and a 5-minute major and a game misconduct and have a nice life and enjoy your donuts. It's simple as that. But I'm going to say one last thing before I leave here. The Canucks need some, and I've been saying this all year, and I even said it last year, we need some size. And we need some toughness and some guys that have got some mean, because after that happened, nobody did anything. And the guy from Nova Scotia said it the best. We're still a small, scared hockey club. And even with Tocchet there, and that's all I can say. And tell Eddie I'm going to have a very nice summer, and I'd like to see him have a great summer too. He's a great producer. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. That's Gary calling in from Maple Ridge. As far as some of the other things in the game tonight. I mean, we would have spoken about a few other things. Number one, if the game wouldn't have gone as long, but, you know, the Canucks also blew their lead. So there were a few positives we could have pulled out. We didn't really discuss Mueller's debut a ton. I mean, he moved fairly well. He kind of got buried in the third, got the penalty, and then didn't really see the ice afterwards. A pretty high intense game. I liked what I saw from his battle level, generally speaking. You can tell still that, you know, it was intimidating, I think, from the speed and the pace of the game. But he's a player that was still making some nice subtle plays. It was pretty quiet, but for the most part, didn't look out of place. And he was playing with DeBrusque and Besser.
Yeah, you know, we chatted about him in the second intermission, I think. Like, he's got some scoot to him. He can move around the ice fairly easily. And made a couple of nice plays along the walls just to turn on players and protect a puck. But, you know, the defensive zone stuff, like, well, I didn't notice anything out of place. So that's a credit to him to have a quiet night in the defensive zone.
Yeah, and we'll see if he gets into the lineup again coming up on Monday against the San Jose Sharks. Now, a player who had a very strong game for the Canucks as far as scoring goal was Jake DeBrusque at his 27th of the campaign as well, matching a career high. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about what did these final few games of the season mean for the Canucks. And Jake DeBrusque, well, he still has an opinion on how these games can play out down the stretch. Here he is meeting with the media post-game.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I think that, I mean, I think there's good things in these games. You know, it's hard, obviously, but you look for positives. You know, you're trying to build for next year. It's obviously a team fighting for their lives, and you know, they show character, they showed heart, and they did what they had to do to get back in the game. I thought that you know, we didn't really generate much towards the second half. They locked down pretty good, and you know, kind of the story of our year. You know, we get it to overtime and just don't find that extra one.
Jake, what's been so difficult about overtime this season?
I don't know. I think that there's it's one of those things where I think there's strategy involved. You know, I think that there's personnel. There's, you know, different things that momentum is even one of them. Honestly, I think there's so many one spurts of this season where it wasn't going our way and it just felt like every game we're going overtime. You know, I think it's one of those things where once you kind of have confidence and you know where guys are going to be and you know what the looks are that you're trying to generate, you know, I think it helps. But yeah, it's one of those things where that's why the game goes 3-on-3. You know, it's for a little bit of, you know, 2-on-1s, things like that. So if you're on the wrong side of it, good teams will make you pay.
You mentioned that they had a lot to play for and you saw that in the third period. It's probably the last game you guys will play this year where there's a lot at stake for at least one of those teams. Is it tough to match that in those moments right now?
No, you know, we want to win for the fans here. You know, they're still coming obviously out and, you know, they've been cheering us on all season. We're at home. We end up at home. That's how I look at it, to be honest with you. I think that there's certain things where guys are trying to, you know, cement themselves. Also trying to put in good, you know, momentum going into the next year to possibly make the team in terms of younger guys and older guys, you know, trying to finish strong. So, you know, it's my first time going through it. But in saying that, you know, there's still a game to be played and no one wants to lose. We're all competitive and, you know, it still stings.
What was your reaction to the incident with Forbert and Trennan?
Yeah, scary. I mean, honestly, you know, I hate that. I've always hated that. My dad's a tough guy and he hated when guys did that. You know, it's heat of the moment. I'm not saying anything like that, but that's, you know, he's probably one of my best buddies on this team and he's gone through so much this year. It was scary. You know, you kind of hope the linesman get in there a little earlier, but at the same point, it's so fast. And it's one of those things where you see blood and things like that, and you see the replay, and it just looks ugly. So, you know, I really hope he's okay. And but, yeah, even growing up, you know, I think that's something that all tough guys will agree you don't necessarily want to do that. But it is heat of the moment and very unfortunate, I guess.
Jake, what did you see from your new line mate, Ty Mueller, tonight?
Yeah, you know, and honestly, we didn't really help him too much, honestly, as a line, me and Brock. But I thought he was pretty good in terms of details in the defensive zone, and he's a crafty player. And it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's first games are always tough, especially later on in the year. I find that, you know, teams are kind of have their system down pat. Like I was saying earlier, there's a team playing for playoffs, and I think it was really good for him. Yeah, he's a pretty good player. Nice to have another Albertan on the line. I wish I could have done more for him in terms of generating chances. You know, I think that would have been pretty cool.
That is Jake DeBrusk after the game 3-2 loss for the Canucks against the Minnesota Wild. And that brings us to the end of the postgame show here tonight. Canucks falling against the Minnesota Wild. Two more games to go on the campaign pick. Monday against San Jose Sharks, and then Wednesday closing things out against the Vegas Golden Knights. Both games on home ice. So enjoy your Sunday, and we'll chat again on Monday evening, Vic.
Yeah, and I guess there'll be a round of applause for Macklin Celebrini for trying
his best
to beat the Minnesota Wild in a 5-point effort.
Yeah, big effort. Big did his best, but the Minnesota Wild came through, and they came through again here tonight. Thank you all for listening, participating, being part of the show. It's a pleasure as always. Two more to go. We're also back on our regular shows on Monday, Bix on the People Show 3 to 4. I'm back on Canucks Central 4 to 6 and leading into the pregame show with Dan Riccio as usual. A special thanks to Lena. You can always check out Lena on Canucks Brunch alongside Josh Elliott Wolf, 11 to noon, Monday to Friday. And a special thanks to our producer Eddie and all of you for listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.